Good morning, Wasatch Back, and happy Thursday. It's 8:06 a.m., and you're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. I'm Jennifer Dobner, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. We've got a newsy hour ahead, but first, let's check in with ABC4's Cedric Haynes for a look at our Wasatch Back weather.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Thursday. We're going to be looking at some slightly drier conditions building into the area. So I think we're going to be looking at partly sunny skies as we go throughout today. Mainly dry conditions, although can't rule out a spotty shower popping up. Overall, high temperatures in the mid-80s for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing to around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Friday Pioneer Day, what we're going to be looking at, again, partly sunny skies. Overall, it's looking mainly dry. That's the good news. Temperatures, I think, climbing into the upper 80s to near 90 across Park City. We'll be looking at those temperatures in the Heber Valley in the mid-90s, so you're going to notice those temperatures really starting to heat up. That will continue into the rest of your holiday weekend. Saturday, look for partly cloudy skies. We'll see that slight spotty shower chance increase just a little bit, up to maybe like a 20% chance, but that's about it. Temperatures climbing to around 90 degrees in Park City. Highs in the mid-90s once again in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Sunday, you guessed it, we'll call it partly sunny skies, very slim chance of a pop-up shower, but most areas staying dry. Temperatures climbing into the lower 90s in Park City, will be climbing into the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. Moving into next week, well, we're going to start things off on a warm note out there with temperatures around 90 for a high in Park City. We'll have those highs back in the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. Again, partly sunny skies. And we may start to add in a slightly better chance of an isolated shower or storm, particularly over the Wasatch Back as we get into your Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons. Not a washout by any means. The chance not very high, but we may bump that chance from a 20% chance to a 30% chance. Again, that's next Tuesday and Wednesday. High temperatures in Park City will be into the upper 80s. We'll have high temperatures in the mid-90s for us in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'll maybe see 4 meteorologists.
Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, we'll hear from Deer Creek High School Principal Justin Kelly, who will discuss the grand opening of Wasatch County's brand new high school July 29. Then we'll be joined by Kathy Van Dyke. She's a co-chair of the new Greater Park City chapter of Grow the Flow, a citizen-led group working to save the Great Salt Lake. And we wrap the hour with Jen Bowman from Wasatch County Parks and Recreation, who has all the insider tips for enjoying the upcoming county fair. After that, stay tuned for Cool Science Radio at 9 o'clock. Paleontologist Steve Brusati explains why birds didn't just descend from dinosaurs. They are dinosaurs. Then, in a medical emergency, the first person who can save a life is often a bystander. Veteran first responders Brad and Kira Newberry explain why everyone should know CPR and how to use an AED and more. Let's check in with some local news. This week marks the 45th anniversary of the Silver King Coalition building fire. KPCW's Christine Weller reports locals who were there that night recall the panic that swept through the community.
On July 20th, 1981, 13-year-old Gilbert Fletcher's father shook her awake around 4:30 a.m. That's when she smelled smoke wafting in through the open windows. The 85-foot-tall Silver King Coalition mine building, next door to their Park Avenue home, was engulfed in flames. Fletcher said fear rolled through her at the sight.
You have a, what, eight-story building on fire next to your family home. That's just a two-story wooden structure. It wasn't just like part of it was on fire. The entire building was on fire. It went up like a tinder.
Soon, sirens were sounding and the community was jumping into action. Volunteer Park City firefighters started alerting nearby residents as fire crews from Heber, Camas, and Colville showed up to help, according to an account on the Park City Museum website. Fletcher said her dad told her and her mother, Peggy Fletcher, to gather up the family pets. Then they loaded into the car along with her grandmother, Blanche Fletcher, who lived nearby.
We drove to the top of Main Street to a friend's house, and we could still see all of the light and the flames and the ash coming off the building, even from the top of Main Street.
In the meantime, Gilbert Fletcher's father and brother, Mel and Rex Fletcher, used garden hoses to wet down the front of the home. Gilbert Fletcher said her dad was a volunteer firefighter and knew the mine building couldn't be saved.
The type of wood was so old and so brittle and dried out. So So their immediate response was to save the surrounding homes and buildings. And that's what they did. And they're lucky that nobody died from that.
Across the street from the Fletchers, 26-year-old Michael Watts and his family were also spraying down their family home. It's now the High West Distillery. Watts was living on Empire Avenue at the time and was woken by sirens and yelling. He said it took only a second to see Silver King was on fire. He then ran down the street to check on his parents, Betty and Bernice Watts. Some believe the building burned so quickly and brightly because years of coal dust layered throughout the structure served as an accelerant.
It was so intense and so big and so hot that, you know, you were basically scrambling to get hoses and do whatever you could to spray down adjacent buildings to try to keep them from just igniting.
Along with panic and fear, Michael Watts said he felt a deep sense of loss. Clusters of stunned locals watched the flames from a distance, many in tears, according to the museum's story. Once surrounding homes were protected, firefighters turned their hoses to the Silver King building. By 6 a.m., a smoking skeleton of the lower two floors was all that remained. Michael Watts said the Silver King building was an iconic part of Park City, a monument to the town's mining past. Gilbert Fletcher agreed, saying it was a symbol of the hardworking people who founded the town. The museum story says the fire was started by three men who were squatting in the building that night. They had attended a concert and broke in to sleep for the night. They allegedly started a fire to stay warm and left around 3 a.m., later testifying that they believed the fire was out. But many Parkites didn't believe the fire was an accident. Now in her 50s, Gilbert Fletcher said there were rumors the historic building was destroyed purposefully to allow for new development.
It was one of the hottest nights of the year. There's no way that three guys that were drunk from a concert came down to just keep warm.
The men also had to break through a fence to get into the building and passed up closer shelters with easier access, Gilbert Fletcher said. After a trial, the men were convicted of misdemeanor reckless burning. Even at 71, Michael Watts said he occasionally thinks of that night. He said the building's loss changed the dynamics of development on Lower Main Street. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher contributed to this report. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
After several years of construction, Wasatch County is about to open the doors of its second high school. KPCW's Christine Weller spoke with Deer Creek High School Principal Justin Kelly to talk about the school's grand opening July 29th. Here's that conversation.
Good morning. I'm KPCW's Christine Weller, and joining me is Principal Justin Kelly here to talk about Deer Creek High School's grand opening coming up. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I first wanted to ask you to just give an overview of what this grand opening event will look like. When is it, and what can locals expect?
We're going to start out, it's July 29th, 5 p.m. We're going to have a ribbon cutting ceremony where there'll be some local authorities, school board members, myself, and a few people will say some remarks concerning the opening house and kind of what's going on. And we have some students that will be there to cut the ribbon and have it be a part of really the first high school in Wasatch County since Wasatch High School started 127 years ago. And so it's kind of a big event that we'll have some things going on throughout the building. It'll be more of a self-guided tour. It's not going to be where we have to have a tour group or those kind of things, but we'll kind of guide people of where we want them to go and see the building, and they'll be able to sign some things that they were here, like a guest book, so in 50 years people can look back and say, yeah, I was at the open house, or I was the first student at Deer Creek High School. And so we want that to be a part of it, and maybe to have them jot down some memories and those kind of things. But That ceremony, that ribbon cutting ceremony, will last about 45 minutes to an hour, maybe. Hopefully less. I'm not going to speak too long, and hopefully the other speakers don't take a whole lot of time. But then we'll have the ribbon cutting, and then it'll be open from 6 to 8, the building, and we'll have the student government will be here selling gear, and our coaches will have their kids out doing some things, practicing tennis. Football will be out there. Pro Look, who is our provider for our uniforms, We have mannequins that will have the student uniforms on in the gymnasium just to kind of showcase what our uniforms will look like and those kind of things. So it should be fun. I know it's fair days here in Wasatch County, and so hopefully if people are at the fair and they're like, oh, I should go look at the school, then they can come over and look at the school. And then on Thursday, it'll be an open house where people can just come in and walk through, and that's going to be from 10 to 8 in the morning. And so that's just the open house where people can kind of come and look at the facility and kind of look at what's been going on for the last 3 years of building Deer Creek High School.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about some interesting or new things that the community might see in this building. What are some aspects that you think community members will be excited about?
Well, I think one of the things is where Deer Creek is located is the old, some of it's the old stockyards in the 1940s, the Heber Creeper that's here in, well, they call it the Heber Creeper. It wasn't called the Heber Creeper in the 1940s. It was actually the largest shipping yard for sheep west of the Mississippi, even bigger than Denver and some of those other places. And so we wanted to kind of pay homage to some of the things that helped Heber get on the map, I guess you could say, or Wasatch County. And so when you come inside, it's going to have a feel of a train station. The rafters are exposed. There's big ceiling fans. We have an old style clock that's in the center that kind of pays homage to what Heber Valley was, kind of going back to that foundation and roots. And so they'll see that. The auditorium is a theater type auditorium. It's steeper than Wasatch's auditorium, a little different looking there. And then there's a lot of natural light, a lot of windows. You'll see a lot of open spaces, places for kids to kind of hang out. We wanted to make it so that kids didn't really necessarily want to leave campus. There's couches up above on the rail, not the railings, but above the library where they can look down into the library. Where the kids will walk up the stairs, there's actually seating areas next to the stairs that kids can kind of go and sit on and just kind of mingle with each other. We're hoping kids will talk and feel like they have a place to kind of call their home.
Yeah, and I understand there are also some aspects to represent the school's mascot, which is the River Hawks. And I believe there's also a nesting pole for Osprey. Is that there? Is that ready?
Yes. Yeah, it's there. It's ready. We put it up last fall. And one of the other things I kind of forgot to mention, and it is a big deal, our athletic facility is separate from the main building. And one of the reasons why we did that is because the committee that was on the building committee wanted to kind of keep this ground that we're on kind of more natural. And there is a creek running through the middle of the property. And instead of filling that in and putting pipes in, they left that open. And so the kids will walk across a bridge going over to the athletic facility. And then we do have an osprey nest that we have put in, and actually for the last month or so, we've had a couple of young males looking for a place to maybe call home, because one of the things I've researched is when an osprey, when they mate, the female picks the male by how good of home they build them. And so we have put a pallet on top of the nest, and we've had a couple of males coming and looking at it. And maybe when the construction kind of slows down a little bit, it'll get a little quieter. And hopefully we can see and get a osprey here, a river hawk. And we've got cables running up, so if we get one there, we can put in some small cameras and watch the whole, you know, the making of the nest, the eggs being hatched and that kind of stuff. I think it'll be kind of cool that we can be interactive with our osprey here locally.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Have a live mascot right on campus.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Hopefully we get one to come and make it its home.
Yeah, and I know the school is kind of mirroring Wasatch High School, so there are a lot of similar amenities in both of those schools. Can you talk a little bit about what are some extra things that Deer Creek has? I think you mentioned previously that Deer Creek has a more advanced animal science area for students. Is that right?
So there is an animal science, and Wasatch High does have an animal science program. It's just, I think when they built Wasatch High 20 years ago, that part was kind of, I don't know if it was cut out. I wasn't a part of that building, but they have a robust animal science program. And so one of the things that here at Deer Creek is we do have an animal science lab. One of the unique things, I guess, about Deer Creek is it's going to be next to MTech. So kids can walk from their junior and senior year if they want to go into a trade like vet tech or welding or hair school. They can do their classes here at Deer Creek and then just walk over to MTech, which is really nice. And so one of the things we wanted to do is prepare those vet tech kids with some animal science. And so we do have an animal science lab. Kids can bring their sheep in or their cows, and we can doctor them there. They can kind of see what it's like to doctor cattle, horses, sheep, pigs in our facility. So that's going to be something that's going to be fun to see. Wasatch County is not as rural as it used to be, but I think that's what draws people here, is they like that. And so that's been our biggest programs in Wasatch County is our animal science classes.
And as far as this being the first year with students at Deer Creek, I know that you wanted to involve students in making the school their own. And part of that is choosing a name for the gym area. Can you talk a bit about why you want to do stuff like that and kind of what that process will look like?
Yeah, I think what we want to do as an administration and some of the things I've talked about is I've had a company that's helped us with branding, and they could have provided me a school song to start out with and to do all those things, but I honestly feel like we got to go back to our roots, and I'm going to mirror Wasatch High. Wasatch High is something that's been a legacy here for a long time. And I went back through and started looking at the yearbook in 1913, and they didn't have a fight song to start out with. They didn't have these kind of things. And I was the former principal of Wasatch High. And so for me, I feel like as we go through this process, it'll mean a lot more to kids and the community if they get to build it along with us, instead of me saying, here's the fight song. Now get behind it and go sing it, right? Like, I think it's going to be a part of of why kids chose to come to Deer Creek, is because they'll get to tell their kids that, hey, I was the first freshman, I was the first sophomore of Deer Creek High School, and we came up with the school fight song, or we came up with this tradition. And to me, I think as we go through it, yeah, it's going to be a little weird. Our first football game's August 14th, and we're probably not going to have a fight song by then because we won't even be in school by then. But I also think it's going to be fun for kids to look back in 10 or 15, 20 years when they can start ringing their kids and saying, I helped do this. I was a part of this. And I think that's what made Wasatch High special, is it feels like you're a part of something. And I just felt like it was going to be a better way to have kids be noticed in the community. It's you don't want to say it's splitting the community apart, but it's making it so that kids have opportunities. And that's why I think it's important that we let kids kind of take some ownership of the fight song or naming the athletic gym, or, you know, I have my ideas. It's Deer Creek High School. Deer Creek Reservoir has a island. Why not call that building the island, right? Because it's still tying into Deer Creek Reservoir and kind of the valley. And so I think there's a lot of things we can do to make this so that this tradition will carry on 127 years, just like Wasatch High. So
yeah. And one big part of this process with building a new high school was the boundary discussion. The The Wasatch County School District Board of Education spent months figuring out where to put the boundaries between these two schools. And at first it seemed like most families wanted their kids to stay at Wasatch. Can you tell us a bit more about how that boundary split ended up?
Yeah, and I wasn't really part of the boundary situation, which I'm glad of as a principal, because I didn't want to be put in the middle of, well, you should come here because of this. And I feel like the school board did a really nice job of listening to the valley and the people here in the valley. I'm going to go back even farther. Even the naming of Deer Creek High School was a valley-wide process. It wasn't just that, oh, this is the name of Deer Creek and you're going to like it. It was, no, we're going to put, you know, some names out there, vote on the name of the high school, and then we'll take the top vote. And I think it turned out awesome. And they did that with the mascot as well. And so going back to the boundaries, I do feel like the school board did a really nice job of listening to the community. And they gave choice. As you know, the state of Utah is a choice state where parents have the right to choose where their kids go to school. And so the school board listened to that, and they did set the boundaries. But because we are moving away from Wasatch High, this valley splitting, kids have a choice. So they could live in the Wasatch boundaries and come to Deer Creek if that's where they felt so compelled with their friends. Or vice versa, if they lived in Deer Creek's boundaries, then they could go to Wasatch boundaries if that's where they felt like they needed to finish their high school career. And so eligibility-wise for sports, we have this 1 year where it's not, the kids aren't going to get penalized. And so as things started playing out with teacher splits and coaches that have been hired and coaches that were coming over from Wasatch to Deer Creek, kids started choosing and following coaches or following their friends and following teachers. And it ended up being a pretty well a 50-50 split. We're within, you know, I don't know the exact number, but it's within 25 to 50 students. It kind of depends on this last little push. Students were sent a letter, and they'll have to kind of decide for fall practices and fall sports by July 27th, because that's the first official days of practices. So we want to follow the High School Activities Association rules and allow those kids to choose, but they have to choose by the 27th. And that means all kids, even in the spring sports, they're going to have to declare which school they're going to. But they ended up being really even. And so I feel like that's kind of a testament of students want more opportunities. They wanted more opportunity to be seen, maybe to start on the football team or be on the cheer team or be on the student government. And I think that's what's been really cool to see is you have now, instead of just 28 student government members, I have 28 student government members here at Deer Creek. And Wasatch has 28, so that's a lot more students involved in their school. It's going to be kind of different for me. When I left Wasatch High, there was 2,700 students, and now I'm going to 1,250 students, and so it's going to be a little different. I'm excited that I get to know the students a little better and get to know their names and that kind of stuff. But I'm just really excited that it ended up being a 50-50 split.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Deer Creek High School Principal Justin Kelly.
The collapse of Utah's Great Salt Lake is considered an urgent environmental issue, but it also affects public health and the state's economy. Grow the Flow is a citizen-led movement working to save the saline lake. And last night, a new Greater Park City chapter gathered at the Park City Library to talk with locals about getting involved. Joining me now is Kathy Van Dyke. She's one of the co-chairs of the local chapter. And welcome, Kathy. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Can you just start by giving our listeners a little background on Grow the Flow and what they're trying to do?
Grow the Flow was established after the fall of 2022 when the lake reached its lowest historical level. And it was founded by Ben Abbott, who has a long history of research. He's a BYU ecology professor. And there are many, many groups, nonprofit groups, working on the Great Salt Lake because it's such a complex issue. And Ben founded Grow the Flow as a sort of a collaborative, looking to pull together the efforts of all. So it's really founded with the simple idea of getting more water to the lake.
And as I've read about it, it looks like they're trying to come at it from all angles. Like, they want to talk about science, but they want to do storytelling about experience of it with the lake. And they're talking about the migratory birds that come through. They're pulling all the pieces together to tell the larger story.
And they're not trying to reinvent the work that's being done. There's been the Great Salt Lake chapter of the Audubon Society forever, the Friends of the Great Salt Lake. So what they're trying to do is draw on the strengths of all those existing organizations, but also realize that science alone doesn't solve these things. It's economics and it's politics. So drawing on law and environmental aspects and policy and helping coordinate the effort. So it's not looking to duplicate the efforts of any of those organizations, but really foster the strength, because it's really an effort that's going to take every one of us in Utah to solve this crisis.
So you and Melanie Webb are the co-founders of the Greater Salt Lake chapter. Tell me about how this came about. Were you already involved in Grow the Flow, and you saw a group of people in this community that would want to participate?
It's sort of the other way around. I've been involved my career for 30 plus years was in environmental engineering and environmental management. And after I retired, I wanted to not be on anybody's schedule. And then when the lake crisis hit, I said, this is where I have to put my time. So since the early days, I've been going to symposia and lectures and events and protests and lobbying things and talking to friends about it, re-educating myself. It's how I became familiar with Grow the Flow and Utah Rivers Council and many of the other organizations. But I felt like I was preaching to the choir, and it is an urgent issue. And so I decided at some point I needed to just do more than preach to the choir. And with the release of the film, The Lake, at Sundance this year, which was an incredible thing, I said, you know, and I call it, that's what I said to the group last night, I'm jumping off a cliff here and I'm hoping you're coming with me, because I decided I need to reach out to more. And not unexpectedly, this community is filled with people who do want to be involved. So this is a month-old endeavor. I've got already 100-plus people on our mailing list. That's just for the Greater Park. We're calling it the Greater Park City Chapter, really all of Summit County and the Wasatch Back, so Heber and so on. Because people who were interested were traveling to Salt Lake. It was a lot. And there, I think, is a lot of talent, and we learned that last night. We have people from all kinds of disciplines. The meeting last night was terrific. We had between 35 and 40 people who came to our initial meeting. And it was just to find out, who are we? What do you want to do? I can't do it all, so I want to hear what people want to do and what action. So that was the key last night, is trying to see how we'll move forward.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear a little bit more about that. But first I wanted to ask you, I think a lot of people think that the lake is a Wasatch Front issue and that it's not a Wasatch Back issue. So tell me why that's wrong.
You know, people look at the lake, and early on, getting water to the lake wasn't even a, quote, beneficial use. And so a lot of people looked at the lake as just something that was there. When this surfaced as a crisis, you're right, people look at it as a Wasatch Front issue, and many people in the Wasatch Front even don't see it as an issue. But when you understand where this leads, the Great Salt Lake being one of about 120 saline lakes in the world, most of them are in decline, and none has ever been saved. And this is something Ben Abbott is fond of pointing out. We could be the first, but we must be the first, because very few of them have 3.3 million people living downwind. And it's not just about saving a habitat, which is crucial. It's about what happens if we lose the lake. Then we get dust storms. And that's not speculation, it's not hypothesis. It's been seen in Lake Owen, which is a classically cited example, Lake Urmia in Iran, and the Aral Sea. So what happens is we divert water the lake shrinks, exposes lake bed, winds come up, we get dust storms. We see those dust storms in Salt Lake, and that dust is certainly will reach the Wasatch Back.
And that dust is, for lack of a better term, it's poisonous. There's heavy metals in it. There's all kinds of naturally occurring things that could be harmful to our health.
That's true. Sand itself, I mean, miner's disease is caused by silicosis, which is pure sand. So the reality is any dust, whether it has toxic components or not, but we do because we have a history of mining and leached. So there is, people usually hear about carcinogenic chemicals and arsenic are the claim to fame, but any dust at all is actually hazardous to our health. So yes, I mean, what I would say is if you don't have an environmental bone in your body, and that's possible, although few in Park City, I think, fall in that category. But it is a health issue. It is an economic issue. And the thing that encourages me more recently is science. There's tremendous research that's been done to understand the flows of the water. Since the crisis, that research is even better, understanding who uses the water, what we can do to save it. But realizing the economic impacts, and Great Salt Lake Rising formed last fall, and that's a coalition of business leaders. And when business leaders start to get involved, then things can really move forward. And that's why I see this as a time of opportunity, because they are seeing the potential economic impact on property values and their businesses.
And here in Park City, we're sort of known for our absolutely great powder, and which is lake effect snow, and that would be a thing of the past if we lose the lake?
If we lose the lake, absolutely. And the thing about the lake is it stays a lake and not a frozen lake because of the salt. We get probably 10 to 15% of our snowfall is because of the lake. And not only that, if the dust storms increase, and that's already happened to a degree, you get dust that settles on the snow. So the length of the ski season has changed simply because snow melts faster because the dust is darker. So not only would we potentially get less snow, and not only our lovely fine champagne powder, as they say, which is lake effect driven. So the impact on the ski industry is very real.
So let's talk about these people who showed up last night and all the talents that you discovered. Were they people who were already involved in some way? Were they curious? What do they bring to the table, do you think?
There were school teachers, former council people, city council, county council, real estate people, people who are involved in their homeowners associations, people involved in the community gardens who understand about landscaping and you know, making a beautiful place with less water. We had a lot of graphic designers. I don't think there was a skill set that one would need that wasn't there. And I think what we need to do is see how we will focus. We can't do everything, and so we need to decide on, there were a couple of great suggestions about getting homeowners associations together so we can better understand the landscaping. We really need to water less. People think that it's all about agriculture and it's them who have to do it and there's nothing we can do. And I think it's extremely important to although we're facing a very serious crisis, people need to be worried enough to act, but not so worried that they're paralyzed.
So it sounds like what you're telling me is that the lake is like the central focus, but everything around it has to make adjustments or change a little bit in order to preserve the resource, the water resource that flows to the lake.
Absolutely. And the changes are significant when you look at the quantified how much water we need. It's measured in acre feet, and an acre foot is basically a foot of water on an acre. 330,000 gallons. It's a lot of water. Mm-hmm. And we need to put, if we could get an additional 200,000 acre feet per year, which is about a 10% change in our behavior, we've got about a 1% probability of actually saving the lake.
Yeah, 1%.
That's not good odds.
No.
If we want to get that up to 50-50, then we have to get something like 750,000 acre feet. Mm-hmm. And not once, not like turning on the faucet and running that much into the lake. It's every single year. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, that's about a 30% reduction in our water use. That's significant, but it's not impossible.
I think it seems more daunting to people than they realize until they get the information.
Exactly, and I think that was what's important. It is daunting, which is why we need everyone. It is daunting, but it is not impossible. We need to do it.
And so will the chapter sort of cue off initiatives of the larger Grow to Flow? Are you developing your own projects, ideas, efforts locally?
We will definitely pull off the basic Grow the Flow, but we'll do it in this local environment to see what we can achieve. Mm-hmm. We know that reducing water that goes onto landscapes is crucial. That alone could get about 200,000. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not enough, but it's a significant amount.
And are you going to participate in lobbying or fundraising?
We will definitely do lobbying. We won't be focused on fundraising, although somebody did suggest that maybe we should incorporate Grow the Flow into Give PC, Live PC, Give PC.
Oh.
I don't even know if that's possible, but maybe we'll do that.
But you're thinking about every angle.
It was one of the ideas that came up, but I think mostly awareness and action.
And so how can residents get involved? When's the next meeting? Do you have a website?
We don't have a website. Grow the Flow has a website, and I encourage people to go there. You can find out. They have links to resources and technical papers. If you're a nerd like me, you can read about all these stats and the research that has been done, and what you'll find is there's very solid science. People can, we have an email. It's Greater Park City, so gpc.chapter.growtheflow@gmail. If they want to email the chapter directly, and that's where we'll be emailing our members and letting them know. Our next meeting is at the library in the community center, August 24th, again from 6 to 7. Although we had trouble last night, there was so much enthusiasm, I had to actually stop people because we had to clear their chairs and get out of the library before it
closed.
Well,
that's a very promising sign.
It was.
Yeah. Anything else you want us to know before we send you back out to do the good work?
No, I would just say water less. As they say, gold is the new green. And people said, what does that mean? Let your lawn be golden instead of green.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, Kathy. We've been speaking with Kathy Van Dyke, the co-chair of the Greater Park City Chapter of Grow the Flow. Please come back and update us on how things are going.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, no matter where you live, the highlight of summer is usually the local county fair. I mean, where else can you find like blue ribbon quilts, cowboys, concerts, and pretty much anything you could dream of that's deep fried? There is something for everyone. And with the annual Wasatch County Fair right around the corner, Jen Bowman, marketing coordinator for Wasatch County Parks and Rec, is joining us by phone with all the inside tips for a great fair experience. Good morning, Jen, and thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. We're very excited for upcoming fair days, beginning today, actually.
I'm sure you are. I know last night you were on the air with some KPCW folks talking about the Demolition Derby draw. How did that go?
That was great. It's always a very tense event. It can really dictate how the team show portion of the Demolition Derby goes. It's a very... all these teams, they put in a lot of time and money into their cars, and you know, it's make or break, and these team draws mean a lot to them. We have some amazing matchups, and the very first heat of the team show is going to be absolutely insane. It's the first place team from last year versus the most aggressive driver for the overall show. So it's going to be a great matchup.
Yeah, that sounds like something nobody wants to miss. Do you have your eye? You have your eye on one of the teams?
I'm not going to pick favorites because they're both dear friends, but I'm very excited to watch it, and I will not be close to that arena. I'm going to be watching from a distance for sure.
No flying bumpers and things like that.
No.
So remind us, if you will, like how many years has the fair been running and what does it mean to Wasatch County?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have some footage from like 1936. From our fair, and that's the earliest that we can trace back. I'm certain it goes farther back than that because it's always been a huge tradition in the Haber Valley, especially with, you know, the farming culture and, just that community aspect. As far as the community, you know, this year's theme is timeless traditions and bringing everybody together. That's what it's all about, especially, you know, America 250 and the fact that our fair is almost 100 years old. Yeah, it's very, very special to us, for sure.
And it is a park and rec event, but it sounds like the community comes together to support that effort and help you pull it off every year.
Absolutely. We have lots of volunteers that come help. Each little niche of the fair has a parks and rec employee or employees over it, and they're all able to help facilitate, you know, from our perspective, parts of the fair, and then they bring in anyone who's willing to help. Exhibits, we always have about, 20 to 30 volunteers for that. Even our county council and the county manager and assistant county manager, it's all hands on deck, and it is such a cool endeavor. But it's nonstop.
And a lot of community pride there, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So the Demolition Derby gets things rolling. What comes next? Like, what are the official dates? How long does the fair run?
Yeah, absolutely. So beginning Monday, the 27th, that'll kick off some new stuff this year, actually. We're offering, we teamed up with the Wasatch County Library, and Brent Kelly, who was one of our grand marshals several years ago, he and his wife, Mary, are huge parts of this community. All of their sons are heavily involved in rodeo. They announce for us. They auction for us. They're just a huge part of our fair days. Have been, will be, hopefully. But they, at 4 p.m. at the Wasatch County Library, he's going to give a history of the fair and rodeo. And then we will roll into our party in the park in Southfield Park. And that is kind of what kicks off the rest of fair days. So each day there's going to be a little something. We have some new stuff this year in addition to the history. Wednesday the 29th, we're really excited. We have a kids market at our, just prior to our movie night. We do an outdoor movie. And we have kid entrepreneurs coming. Anywhere from 5 to 12 years old, they can sell whatever they'd like, and they have to, basically be the managers of that booth, obviously with parental guidance. But so we're really, really excited for that.
So building some entrepreneurial skills for the future of Wasatch County.
Yes, exactly.
And any hidden gems at the fair that people may not see as often or know about?
Yeah, absolutely. I always like to point out two of them. The exhibits, those are this year going to be at the rec center. That's a new move for us, but it's going to be bigger, better than ever, and air conditioned, which is always nice. But the theme of Timeless Traditions, America 250, people have been, they've already started asking if they could bring this or that. We're going to have some really cool stuff that people can look at. And it's all of our local community members, neighbors, that have created or presenting something they're proud of. That is definitely undervalued, and I highly recommend walking through. The other thing is our livestock sale throughout the week, beginning on Tuesday. We have showmanship classes for beef and swine and chicken, and all fair days animals. And then on Saturday at 9 a.m. is the livestock sale, which is the largest in the state, and it brings in over $1 million.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
Yes.
That's amazing. And those are our future Farmers of America kids that are doing that?
Exactly. 4-H kids. So they've been working with their animals all summer long, feeding them premium foods and really just – immersing themselves in that lifestyle, and then they come show their animals, auction them off, and then have a little money for scholarships or next year's animals or whatnot.
That's great, but I think I would have a hard time parting with my animal if I were.
I know, it's been so much time with them. I would too.
Yeah. How many visitors are you expect? What do you draw every year?
We generally see over 150,000 people. That come through, start to finish. So today through August 1st, it is just a rotating door of spectators and patrons, neighbors. It's a fun time. It's a lot of people that come through our doors.
Well, that's great. And tell me about tickets and parking for that $150,000.
we do still have tickets available, miraculously. Tonight's Demolition Derby, we still have some great seats. Just go to WasatchParksandRec.com, click on Saturdays, and they're all right there. Tomorrow, we have a handful of tickets left. That's going to be a great show. We have two youth heats, which is always a blast to watch. Kids as young as 12 years old are out there in a car, don't even have a driver's license, and they're crashing cars. so we do still have tickets for Thursday and Friday Demolition Derby. Saturday is sold out. But then the rodeo next weekend, we do still have all three nights available for tickets.
Great.
Parking is pretty easy. We have such a great facility and a new parking lot on the south side of our bleachers, which has three different entrances, holds over 400 cars. So nobody should be walking too terribly far. There's plenty of parking on site, and it really kind of disperses it nicely with the parking lots around all of our facilities, depending on where your seats are. So lots of great things happening here for sure.
So I wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite fair memory from your years of going to the fair?
I do. I have two young boys, and you know, so we always go to the fair the carnival the very first night, mm-hmm. which is Wednesday. And last year, my boys were finally big enough to go down the big jumbo slide.
Oh, great.
Without mom.
Oh, even better.
Right? Like, gosh darn it, now I don't get to go.
Yeah.
But my two boys, you know, just seeing the smiles as they're coming down, racing each other on their gunny sacks, and the giggles, the laughter, and, you know, just seeing people you haven't seen since last fair days. You know, attending the barbecues, and you know, it's just a good old fashioned fun.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's what you guys are hoping for every year as you put the fair together, that people go away with that big grin on their face.
Exactly.
So once again, the dates are, it starts today and it runs through
August 1st, next Saturday.
Okay.
Yep.
Anything else you want folks to know before we let you get back to your last-minute planning?
Oh, gosh. Please come. Please enjoy it. We have so many new things this year, and our drone show is shaping up to be great. Tickets are still available for 5 of the 6 event nights, and we'd love to see everybody out there.
Well, thanks so much, Jen. We really appreciate it. We've been speaking with Jen Bowman from Wasatch County Parks and Rec about the upcoming county fair. And happy fairing. Hope everything goes well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Recycle Utah's Summer of Sustainability offers films, dinners, and events to help the community go green. KPCW's Ula Britt Libre has more.
The Park City-based organization works to divert waste from the local landfill while educating residents on ways to help. Recycle Utah is reaching out to the Wasatch Back with green-focused events this summer. Executive Director Andy Hecht says the center will bring back its impromptu barbecue July 28th.
Right after work, right about 5 o'clock, we pull out our big green egg and we host a little gathering of friends and family for Recycle Utah. Bring hamburgers, bring some beverages, come and have fun.
The nonprofit's annual 100-mile meal is August 22nd at Red Pine Lodge. Featuring food sourced within 100 miles of Park City, the dinner is capped at 200 guests from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Vail does an amazing job. Their chefs love to be on that dinner because they get to be creative. They think outside of the box with the ingredients that are brought to them, and they make an amazing meal.
After everyone eats, the center will share plans for its new facility during the Recycle Utah Rendezvous until 10 p.m. The move will expand the nonprofit's educational space and recycling capacity.
We are excited to share with our community the direction Recycle Utah is going, and this is finally the chance we get to open up and show everyone.
The group hopes to break ground in March 2027. Supporters can attend the entire evening for $300 or join the rendezvous later for $100. Complete details and tickets are available at kpcw.org. Recycle Utah is a financial supporter of KPCW. Ula Britt Libre, KPCW News.
More than 63,000 Utahns have dropped their health care insurance since federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act expired in January. KUER reports the decrease accounts for nearly 16% of the 400,000 Utahns who enrolled through the federal marketplace last year. Federal data released in June shows Utah is in the middle of the pack compared to other states. But even though Utah's drop wasn't the steepest in the country, healthcare leaders say there's cause for concern. Data released so far only includes enrollment changes from February 25 through February 2026, so the total decrease may be larger. When Congress did not extend the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, it led to higher insurance costs for millions of Americans, with an average increase of about 22%.